G'day everybody and welcome to today's podcast. We will chat with Almin Sinclair and elaborate more on the impact of assessment on student well-being. This is Alzit Leroux and with me,
Anneli Adendorf.
Let's talk transformative assessment. Well, good day, Almin. Today we have Almin Sinclair in our midst. And Almin, maybe just a quick where you work. You are from the Center for Student Counseling and Development, right?
Yes, I'm an educational psychologist mm-hmm. at the Center for Student Counseling and Development. I'm also the head of the unit for academic counseling and development. So we are a group of educational psychologists who work with students who normally will report to us with academic needs, mm-hmm. they're facing academic challenges, and being experts in the field of learning and development, we do our best to determine what the challenges are, what it's caused by, and how we can support them to excel in their academics.
Amazing. Thank you, Almin, and thank you for being here today. It's lovely having you here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Maybe to just open the conversation, if you can maybe share with us some maybe predominant needs from students that you assist with from the center side.
Okay. So I think the best way to answer it is first to explain how the center functions, because that will give you an idea of why a student comes to us for support, and then how we collaborate within the center to support these students. So we consist of four different units. As I've said, I'm from the unit for academic counseling and development, where we have educational psychologists that support from an educational psychology perspective. So we provide psychotherapy, but also support with much needed skills for students to excel in their academics. So we will support them with study skills, time management skills, stress management skills. We help them with self-motivation. And then we also provide a career counseling service. So especially for students who are uncertain about their programs, that's available for them. But we closely liaise with one of the other units, the Unit for Psychotherapy and Support Services, where we have clinical psychologists and counseling psychologists who works with students' challenges that impact on their life in general and then on their academics too. So they use counseling and psychotherapeutic skills to address depression, anxiety, and other psychological factors that will impact on their life. So you can now already, you may ask, what's the difference between the two units? There's not a lot of difference. It's the approach that we follow, and we work closely together. Then we also have the disability unit in our team that helps students with disabilities to adjust learning material for them to be more accessible. They advise these students on how to excel on campus, having specific disabilities, but they also advise lecturers and staff in the student communities on how to accommodate the students. And then they also work with accommodations during tests and exams. That plays into the whole assessment talk. And the educational psychologists in my unit also works with the process of getting those accommodations and motivating for it. And we also have a careers office, or it's called the Unit for Graduate Career Services, that helps to prepare students for the world of work. So basically all four units are involved with students who need to face the challenges of assessments.
Oh. And one thing I hear is, thank you for that context, because it really alludes to the fact that student learning is not an isolated thing happening. We are working, there are human beings, and a lot of things are integrated in this space we call higher education. So it's not just the student and the academic path of the student, but it's a human being affected by a lot of factors surrounding that being. of which one can be assessment and the impact thereof on this human being, right?
Yeah, that's the thing, that assessments are in the end one of the stressors that students are facing. So assessments per se, I will be reluctant to say that assessments equals mental health problems. It's not so simple. It's just one of many stressors that students face. And sometimes it's just one too many. And that's when it becomes a challenge that really, where we really need professional help to help them to deal with it and to manage all the things that comes around with that.
So, I mean, the question that's been in my mind is, has the students, the problems that they bring to you, the things that you deal with, has it changed over, let's say, the past decade or so that you've been working with students? And is there anything that we can learn from that, taking it back to how we teach and assess? Because just as we've just said, we can't take the student, you know, they're not a decontextualized being in our classrooms in the same way assessment's part of a bigger package of teaching and learning in the classroom as well. But have you seen any specific things that you're now seeing more often than in the past that might be worthwhile for us to take note of?
So I think it's very much context related, and you probably have heard it over and over now, and I'm going to mention it again. Post-COVID, things look different. I think immediately after COVID, it was very difficult for students to manage their online lives and their in-person lives. It seems like it's moving, it's now settling, and we're moving more towards having an in-person life again with an online component supporting it. Where last year still, it was really a challenge where they were sitting in class and then suddenly just after the physical classes, they had to be available for an online assessment that's happening where they need data, they need a device, they need a place to sit that's quiet. Those things, it seems like it's a bit more sorted now, and I think they adjusted to those challenges. What we do see is that the psychological challenges that they are facing are more extreme. So it's not, many of them are not dealing with stress per se anymore. It's now an anxiety disorder. Or it's not depressive symptoms only anymore. It's full-blown depression that we're seeing. So, and that makes it a little bit more challenging. It's severe. The severity has definitely increased. And we are inundated with those type of appointments and people coming looking for help with that.
Hmm. Do you sometimes find that, I know you mentioned that assessment is just one of many factors that could sort of bring students to your door. But have you found that there's something particular about assessments that, I don't know, stresses students out or is the final straw of the camel on breaking the camel's back, or using some of those metaphors? But what do you think it is about assessment specifically that brings students to your center?
Look, I think it's the way we think and we talk about it. So for many, assessments are not necessarily part of the learning process. Now when I say for many, I'm talking about students specifically. They see it as tests of capability, tests of knowledge. Am I good enough? Am I a failure? Is that going to really put it down in marks that I'm a failure, that I'm not good enough? And for a large percentage of our students, that's really taking away a dream. If you hear you're not good enough, it's also that one promise that you will be able to actually move forward in life, that's that they see is being taken away. So what, when we see assessments in that very narrow sense, I think that's part of the problem. When you're prone to something like anxiety, you battle with cognitive distortions like black and white thinking, like catastrophizing. That's a very difficult English word. Catastrophizing.
You did well there.
And assessments, it's a trigger for those things. So if you battle with anxiety, it just triggers the typical irrational thought processes. So I think, again, it's not assessments per se that's the problem. It's just one of the triggers that can cause mental health challenges to really come to the surface.
We have been talking about assessment cultures, and you make me think now, so a number of things coming out of this, that identity link, am I good enough or not, rather than am I there yet? So I know some of the people I talk with on campus, if we had an ideal world, we'd like to see assessment as just testing whether you, or determining whether you have achieved the outcomes yet. But we have this time pressure, and we're in a culture where maybe well-meaningly over a long period of time, we've built in more and more assessment to try and help students stay on track. But I'm wondering sometimes if there's lots of little assessments, I've seen with first year students that they struggle to see how important each event is. So a little assessment that might contribute 2 or 3% to a final mark becomes really big in their mind. So this constant assessment in an attempt to help them stay on track, coupled with the high stakes nature that they then read into it, whether it is that high stakes or not. We've also spoken with more than one person in the past year that spoke about how we need students to actually try things and get it wrong so that they can learn from that and try again. But we're struggling more and more to get students, even in formative assessment environments, to engage with a problem and fail at it. And I'm wondering, you made me think now when you spoke about it to them, each time they might read it as a measure of whether they're good enough or not.
But I wonder if we have enough open conversations with our students about the purpose of assessments per se. Because that's part of when I see a student who present with these typical fears around it, that's part of the conversation that I then have with the student is, what's the purpose of those assessments? So now I can just guess, because I'm not the lecturer, and I can also work from an ideal world with it. But once you bring in that alternative dialogue about assessments, it seems like you are definitely containing the anxiety around it a little bit. So I wonder, and I know that time is precious, but should we not start to deconstruct that terminology? And because I was a teacher before, so to become an educational psychologist, you must know about a little bit about teaching. So you do your first assessments ideally will be to determine what your students know. But if I don't tell my students that that's the purpose of the assessment, their default will be, it will tell the lecturer, I don't know enough. It's not that it will tell the lecturer what the lecturer still needs to put in place so that I, in the end, do know enough. So I think we need to communicate more with our students about the purpose of each one of the assessments, about the outcomes that we want to reach, not only about the content, but about the process. And then one thing that I think, and it's because we have these large numbers and these large amounts of assessments, but I think one thing that we often miss is the learning opportunity in the results or the feedback of the assessment. There's one of the lecturers in our extended degree programs who actually do a workshop with their students on how you interpret your test results, how you interpret the test, that the feedback on your test, and how you use that to prepare for the next test. So, but it's only one person who does that with their students. Otherwise, it's going to be a mark that's going to be filed and the learning opportunity is missed. So I was speaking to one of my staff members this morning who also lectures in the Faculty of Medical and Health Sciences. And she said, but numbers are large. So if you have an assignment, for example, to give timeous feedback about it, it's so difficult. But what you can at least do is to remark in a lecture or on the learning management system about themes that you're picking up, and to ask your students to make them alert of the things that you become aware of so that they can immediately pick up on it and continue with the learning process.
I actually, on the feedback point, I have to throw this in here. I was in a conversation in an assessment workshop a week or so ago with a professor who shared with people how on the learning management system she gives verbal feedback because it's just so much quicker than typing. So LZ, you're normally one bringing in the technology, but the technology becoming available to us or already available to us allow us sometimes to get in there more quickly, because yes, I mean, assessment without feedback, such a big part of the value of it just goes lost.
And just to pick up on that is, if you think now in terms of mental health, anxiety is often created by the fact that we don't know or we have the wrong information. So if we don't know, our brains are programmed to start to look for possible answers. And it often comes up with answers based on what you already know. It's not necessarily the correct answer. So we start to formulate our own stories about what's happening here. And that provokes anxiety. So if we can combat that with the correct information, I think that will already start to help our students.
And that's also part of those part of the process of creating those safe spaces for your students to learn, is in being transparent about basically the why of your assessment, right? So that's on the one hand. What I hear is be transparent with your students what this assessment is about, in the sense of what's the purpose thereof, and why you have designed it the way it's been designed, to basically fill in those gaps and take out those anxiety triggers for the student that then can help change the discourse, the inherent discourse as well about assessment. Because I was thinking, if say for instance I have a different approach to assessment as a lecturer, but I don't communicate that to my students. My masses of students who still enter into my class come with that preconceived idea about assessment because of past experiences, right? So if I don't play open cards with them and say, listen guys, this is how I engage, this is how I view assessment, this is the purpose of my assessment in this class will be this and this and this, what is your input on it? Or also get the student voice in that, and then in that way collaborate with the students and transform actually the way that students perceive assessment in a certain sense.
Yeah, I think the academics that we've had in here in our discussions, LZ, have all referred to that, that how they bring their students into the discussions, all of them doing different things in terms of assessment. So it's a theme that's coming through for people that are trying different things, and very useful in knowing that.
Mm. Do you think there, maybe from your experience, are there anything else that you can sort of advise to lecturers or help them? How can we help lecturers to help students to manage their assessments in a way? We've now mentioned about, being transparent and communicated clearly, etc. Because I'm also thinking the ideal would be to have lesser students coming across the center on your path, because that'll indicate we have healthier students, right? So are there anything that you think that lecturers can assist, specifically pertaining to assessments, in student well-being?
I think it's different strokes for different folks. So if you can, if it is at all possible to have a variety of ways in which you assess students, it definitely can help. It doesn't, and there I want to be clear, it doesn't mean that you have a different way of assessing person A from person B, from person C, because that's just not practical. But if you build in assignments, group work, tests, because some people actually do like to showcase their knowledge in a test, even ways of oral assessments, because the different personalities prefer different ways of demonstrating their knowledge. And if you can have a variety of ways that you use, where you use technology for them to showcase their knowledge, I think that's definitely something that I will consider strongly if I'm a lecturer. And the other thing is that stress per se is not bad. And both lecturers and students need to understand that. So when you are dealing with a situation that's causing stress, it brings emotions and feelings that makes you uncomfortable. But that creates the opportunity for learning and for adjustment. So it's at that exact moment where you start to look at what do you know? What do you need to adjust? Is there something new that I need to learn? And you grow, and you can continue to the next point where you learn something new again. And that's exactly what assessments does. It will create that feelings and emotions of discomfort, but that forces us to learn and to develop. And so it's important that we normalize that we do not hide away from it and miss important opportunities for learning and development. So we are very careful to write those letters that says you don't have to write this assessment, we postpone it to a sick exam or sick test, because it's exactly for that reason. You need to learn to work through these stressors. There are circumstances where it's necessary, where it's really where you work with a diagnosable condition and where it's just not indicated right there and then. But otherwise, rather contain the emotions, the difficult emotions that you're having. Don't see it as something abnormal. There's nothing abnormal about an assessment. We just need to learn how to deal with it.
Perhaps something else that springs to mind. And maybe this is the dreamer in me that's posing this question. But do you think maybe in the ideal world, if our assessment cultures around the globe, basically, not just speaking about our institution, but when assessment in general, the view thereof can change from, like we spoke about, change or transform from dealing with marks and you are good enough or not good enough, if that can shift into something else, something empowering and supporting a learning process, do you think that could have also a huge impact on student well-being?
Definitely. We know that if you can demonstrate success, that it positively affects on well-being. And this is an absolute ideal opportunity to demonstrate success. So if we can almost rebrand the dialogue around assessments as opportunities to demonstrate what we know and demonstrate our successes, even if it's small successes, then we create these unique opportunities to experience success, to perform, and that positively impacts on well-being.
Also, that makes me think, to some degree, that's what we're doing, trying to do with this podcast series as well, is to bring in people that have done a little bit of that in their own context, in their own classrooms, and to hear how they did it and what's happening there. I'm thinking of the of two of our previous participants, both of them to some degree changed the dialogue around assessment towards something more formative, more about learning, and where it's an opportunity to showcase what you can't do. Charmaine, after the previous recording, actually shared with us that there are instances where students are too scared to show what they know because they fear that the assessment's about lecturers trying to find out what they don't know. So they hold back out of our fear of being caught out for not knowing. It's an interesting and tricky space, assessment, when you bring human emotions into the picture as well, right? I really like what you said about different assessment methods. That's well aligned with our policies and our current approach to assessment, which asks for the same, because students have strengths in different areas, and what I'm good in might not be what someone else is good in. I always felt, just give me an oral and I'll be able to convince you, but please don't make me write something. But that's the scientist.
And
for
I'm
you.
The other way around, though.
You're the other way around, yeah. So, yeah.
But I think another thing, and I also hear that from your remark just now, Hanelie, is the importance of feedback. So when I'm a lecturer facilitating learning, I also get feedback. You know, not, and now I'm not talking about students, please give me feedback on how I teach. That's not what I mean. So the responses of students in their assessments, the collaborations, maybe their self-reflections, or whatever way my assessments has been drafted or designed, will give me as a lecturer some information back. So it provides me with feedback on, like you said, that initial assessment that you do, the baseline assessment, to determine where do I start off, what should I adapt in my teaching or strategies, etc. Because what do my students know from here on, etc. So in a sense, assessments give me feedback, but also we spoke about the importance of feedback back to the students and the importance to do something with that feedback. And I was thinking, bringing in the technology, how something like a forum can, for example, be a good opportunity to bring in the voice of the common themes that may be presented from the assessment and share that back into the group, into the class, and then give opportunity for students to respond again on that. So then feedback informs learning again, and it's not just feedback on a mark saying, but okay, so what does 80% mean, you know? But that's again on the whole notion of marking or not marking, to mark or not to mark, that is the question. But yeah, so I think the importance and almost like rethinking or thinking out of the box again, and how can we provide our students with feedback that will inform and feedback that will feed forward and or feedback that they can do something about? Because if that feedback doesn't change the lane or change the way I'm doing things, then was it feedback at all? You know, so on feedback, do you guys get different feedback from students visiting the center as well? Or do you just get the students with the problems and then you don't see them again?
That's an interesting question you're asking. So you can send out also these surveys that you ask for feedback about the services, but you must always remember that the feedback is answered by clients with the specific profiles that came to visit the center. So it's really difficult to work with that. And often students come for one. Just to say, to get client feedback in a center like ours is a difficult one. But then also often you see students for a number of sessions and suddenly they don't come back. So, and immediately being human, you start to think, I did something wrong, I wasn't good enough. Just to hear maybe sometime along the line later on, they decided not to come back because they felt they were helped. Students do not often come back and say, thank you very much, that was actually helped a lot. They just don't come back because the life goes on. Their life is, it happens very quickly. But then there are times when you get that email a year or so later to say how things did, things are better and how things did work out. And that really makes it worth it. So unfortunately, I can't give all the information about what students are telling us, but it really makes it worth it when you get those emails to tell how things really worked out.
So I'm thinking, in closing, I mean, besides what you already mentioned, bringing students into the assessment conversation and discussing with them what our purposes, our intentions are with the assessments, and besides rebranding the dialogue around assessment, what it is meant to do, is there anything else you would like to tell lecturers to do more of, less of, stop doing, start doing, as far as assessments from anything that you've seen?
I think, so we didn't even talk about concessions, exam and test concessions. And we see that that's increasing. The number of people applying for concessions are increasing every year. And there's different reasons for that. I think there's certain diagnosis that's getting more popular. There's a number of students who were at school with those specific diagnoses, got the support that they needed and managed to get into higher education coming here with a lot of support. Now it's continuing here. And that support impacts on how especially tests and exams are done. I know there's a lot, and I'm no expert on it, but for universal access and universal design, there's a lot of research about that. But I think within reason, it's important that we do accommodate our students with certain disabilities and certain diagnoses. Because sometimes it's really just one, I don't want to say it's a hurdle, but it's one challenge. It's that's making it difficult for them to excel. And if you can compensate it for it to a certain extent, or if you can remove it to a certain extent, they excel in their academics without losing the academic rigor, the quality, etc. So I'm often still asking the question, who decided that a specific paper of a certain number of marks should be written in a specific number, a set time? Who decided that this specific paper of 100 marks must be finished in 3 hours? And then when you look at it like that, then the 10 minutes per hour that the student with anxiety is requesting, or where the professional is requesting or recommending it, where that comes into play, it's not that much. And that 10 minutes for every hour makes a huge difference in that student's thought processes around performance in that specific time frame. So I think, in general, lecturers are very accommodating when we work with them, when we make the recommendations. But so within reason, just bear with us, please.
Mm-hmm. I think as I draw together in my mind, I'm always trying to take something with out of all these conversations. What stands out for me from the conversation with you, Almin, is the focus on learning. So it's not making assessments easier. It might be part of it. It's not doing away with exams. We might need less of it. We might need less assessment, but it's really focusing on learning and the whole person learning, that the whole thing of being a well-rounded individual, understanding that the students, when they're here, also learning how to deal with stress. I often like to remind myself that we don't get them as the fully formed graduates yet. This is what they're here for. That's what the 4 years is about. So allowing them that opportunity to learn these skills while they are here, not only learn the content.
Fantastic. Almin, big thank you. Thank you not only for joining us today, but for you and your team at the center, the amazing work that you do. Thank you so much for all the support that you provide, not only to our students, but in that way also support our academic staff in that way. So thank you for the just the way that you engage from your heart-centered space with our students, and may we continue to make choices, you know, from that place of love and care for our students and care for one another. And and just thank you for opening up different ways where we can also engage differently with our differently abled students and all across the board. So thank you, huge thank you for the work that you do and the way that you and the colleagues do it so much. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Alzeit and Hanley. Thanks for inviting me, and good luck with this series.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. That's it for now. Until next time.